You're listening to the City Gospel Movement's podcast, where we celebrate and accelerate collaborative gospel work in cities around the world.
We believe God is already at work in your city. We're here to help you ask, what is God doing where I live, and how can I join in?
If you love your city, love the church, and believe God can do amazing things in your city, you're in the right place.
Let's get started.
My dream has always been come together with pastors who, yes, pray together, yes, have fellowship, yes, encourage each other, but far more than that, are intentional to bring the gospel to every man, woman, and child in the city. And that is so life-giving.
All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of our City Gospel Movement podcast, where we help celebrate and accelerate gospel movements around the world. Today, we have Jesse Bradley. And if you don't know Jesse, you're going to find out in about the next 30 minutes what an incredible leader he is up in Auburn, Washington. One of his past lives, Jesse was a professional soccer player and is now a pastor with a passion for his city and his community and for people to come to know Jesus. So stay tuned. This is going to be one not to miss. Jesse, thanks so much for joining us here on the City Gospel Movement podcast.
Stephanie, thank you so much for having me. You know, Seattle and Portland, we're rivals in sports, but we're together when it comes to the gospel. And I want to start out by saying I have so much just admiration and gratitude. When I think of the Luis Palau Evangelistic Association, I was in seminary when they started intentionally pouring into the next generation, and I was able to come to Portland, and the training and encouragement I received then, continue to receive, and then also the vision for citywide gospel movements that you have. It's so needed. It's so timely in our country. So I'm grateful for everything you're doing, and it's great to connect with you today too.
Oh, that's great. That's super fun to hear those stories too of you know, we hear that so often of when people have intersected with the Plow Association at some point in their life. So it's always fun to get to talk to somebody like yourself. And, you know, I know, Jesse, you're up in Auburn, Washington. And for many people, when we think of kind of the Northwest and Seattle, it just feels like Seattle. But Seattle really has a tremendous amount of suburbs. Give us a glimpse of where Auburn is and how, well, that relationship to Seattle and how big your city is.
That's right. If you don't live here, we like to call the greater area the Sound. And Seattle and Tacoma are the two biggest cities. Bellevue would be third. Auburn is south of Seattle, and it's also east of Tacoma. So kind of halfway in between Seattle and Tacoma, and we're considered South Sound, and it's a great place to live. Love it here in Seattle.
Jesse, where did you grow up? And can you give us a little bit of background? Just where did you kind of get your start? And tell us a little bit about your professional soccer career.
Right. I grew up in Minnesota, and there was a lot of snow, very cold winters. We've had about 3 weeks of snow here in Seattle, which is really unusual.
It's really strange for Seattle.
It is. And people have their favorite hashtags, Snowmageddon and Snowpocalypse and all this. But I'm thinking that's like an average month in the Midwest. But in the Midwest, of course, there's snow plows and salt. And in Seattle, there's like three snow plows, I think, for the whole city. So it does take a while to remove the snow, and kids have been out of school for a few weeks, so that's always a good adventure too. But my wife and I then met and married in Iowa. I went to college on the East Coast at Dartmouth. I also did seminary in Dallas. And then I served on the West Coast in three different churches, North Coast Church, which is pretty well known in San Diego, a really healthy mega church. And then I moved up to San Francisco and served there as a senior pastor for over 7 years. And I've been here in Seattle for just over three. The Lord keeps moving me further north, but I'm hoping Canada isn't in the near future. I'm quite content here in Seattle. But as far as spiritually, I didn't grow up reading the Bible. I didn't know about Jesus. My parents, unfortunately, had very negative experiences and kind of shielded me from anything faith-wise. And when I went to Dartmouth, I took a class, the Introduction to World Religions. And I share this story because so often passion comes out of people's deep personal stories. And my life changed eternally, and just on a daily basis, my life changed And it was through that class that I took. It was the first time I ever read the Bible. The professor was critical, tried to undermine scripture, but he assigned the Gospel of John. And we studied all the different religions and read different texts, but the Bible was different than anything else I read. And when I compared religions, so much of it was about earning and performing and trying to be good enough for God. And then Christianity was the exact opposite, where God loves us. It's grace, an undeserved gift. And he sent his son to die for us in our place. And his son is also risen, and Jesus is the Messiah. And when I heard that, I understood it intellectually, but my will, I pushed against it. And for a year, I just was not ready to say yes to follow Jesus. But there was a Christian. It was the first Christian I ever talked to. And I probably asked him hundreds of questions. There's a guy named Mike on the track team. And he explained to me about this relationship with God. And I listened to him and I watched his life closely. And I kind of kicked the tires. And it came to the point where I knew, like, this is real. This is legit. Mm-hmm. And C.S. Lewis says, you know, ultimately you decide with Jesus. Is he a lunatic? You know, he thinks he's the Son of God, but he isn't. Is he a liar because he knows he isn't, but he's spreading that message? Or is he the Lord? And I made a decision my sophomore year to put my trust in Jesus. It's the best decision of my life. So much joy. I knew I was going to heaven. My sins are forgiven, and I have eternal life. I'm in God's family. And I just started to sing internally. I'm not gifted with a good singing voice. I sing in the shower. But on the inside, I just had this song in me walking around campus, and started to change me, my relationships, the way I talked about people. And that was the start of my relationship with God. And I never thought I would be in ministry, but God has a way of surprising us. And sometimes the greatest blessings in life are ones we don't see coming.
I love those stories. I'd be so curious what that professor is like. Oh no, that's the opposite of what I wanted to have happen. Right.
Right.
And the power of the word is so incredible. And also just God's perfect timing. So kind of walk us through what your, you know, after Dartmouth, then your next steps into more of a professional sports, and then we'll kind of swing back around to where you're, what you're currently doing now.
Sure. As I mentioned, when I grew up in Minnesota, the first place we lived, it was an apartment complex in the football stadium for the University of Minnesota Gophers in the parking lot. And we would go to all the Gophers games. And at age 3, I told my parents, that's what I want to do when I grow up. And it never changed. I wanted to play professional sports. Basketball was my first love in terms of sports, but my talent was stronger with soccer. And I played, you know, in terms of our state championships, our high school team, we won a couple championships in the Metrodome. So, of course, that was so exciting and a shootout. And then that really opened the door to play in college. And I played at Dartmouth, where the coach is Bobby Clark, who's a legend in Scotland. And he's been a longtime coach in the States, Notre Dame, Stanford. He coached New Zealand national team. He's phenomenal. And it was such a top quality program. And the bonds we had together on that team, it was like family. And we won the Ivy League a couple times, made it to the Final Eight, lost to Rutgers and Lexi Lawless and in the NCAA tournament. And then beyond that, I played overseas, and I played in Scotland. You know, I did play in Minnesota for a season, but it was before the MLS. A lot of those guys are, you know, two of them are leading the Minnesota team now in the MLS, you know, in terms of management and running the team. But there was no MLS here. And then I played overseas, Scotland and Zimbabwe. And it was in Zimbabwe where after a season, you know, I was taking a prescribed drug to prevent malaria, and that drug built up toxic levels in my system. And I was fighting for my life for a year, and it took me about 10 years to fully recover. So there was ending to my soccer career that was just so tragic. And then so much recovery on so many levels, because it was like a massive drug overdose, and my heart would beat 160 beats a minute, and atrial flutter, and it was brutal. But sometimes life is going one direction and then it's not going that way anymore. And my dreams of playing soccer till I was 40, you know, were crushed. And God started to change me deeply on the inside. My identity shifted from friends and success and health and soccer to having it in the Lord in a new security. Because with everything else that was gone, it's like, well, who am I and what do I still have? And I still had God's love. And he started to humble me big time. My prayer life changed. I started to get honest with him. Psalm 62:8 says, pour out your heart to him, pour out your soul, trust in him. He's your refuge. I never knew how to do that before. I didn't know how to let him into pain. I thought you just act tough and persevere. And he started to heal me in many ways and then direct me towards ministry. And it was just volunteering when I had health after quite a while. In middle school and start to serve there and then do an internship. And so one step after another, the Lord wrote the script, but I never saw a ministry coming, but now I look back and I'm so grateful. And I think a lot of people probably listening feel this way, that ultimately God knows better than anyone else what we're designed to do. And like, if you have an appliance, you talk to the company or the maker because the maker knows. And our maker is benevolent. He's kind, he's caring, and he will guide us even when something isn't maybe our first choice or we don't see it coming. He will guide us lovingly with his grace into that role and even the specific location. So be encouraged today that God is with you, that he guides you, and that he ultimately knows what is best.
Yeah, it's so true. It's such a great reminder too, that our Lord is right there. He's like, oh no, I am your identity. And we're going this way. Yet another fantastic story of how God orchestrates those things. So then into the ministry, because I know we want to get talking about just how you're orchestrating life there in Auburn and being really intentional with the community and other pastors. Tell me a little bit about just how you feel that you are doing ministry your way.
You know, I thought in seminary I'd be a traveling evangelist, and God redirect me to be a pastor, but I have this passion for evangelism that is not separate from discipleship, and it's combined. And I think that it's so important that people don't just make decisions to follow Jesus, but then they also multiply and make more disciples and go deep. And so as a pastor, I've sometimes wondered, what does it look like to be, you know, an evangelist and a pastor at the same time? And that's kind of a unique wiring. I think of, you know, Greg Laurie, who does that and has been so faithful in that. But it took me a while to kind of get comfortable in my own skin and comfortable in that role, because a lot of the models that I saw, they were just more of a teaching and just focus on believers only. And I think it's so healthy when the church kind of moves beyond the walls of the church and meets people where they're at, in addition to having healthy ministry inside. So I did that in terms of college ministry at the University of Iowa as a college pastor for 7 years. And we saw God do amazing things. It felt like the book of Acts, where, you know, our group went from 20 to over 800 and people were coming to know the Lord every week. And that was my first experience out of seminary. But then I also then moving to the West Coast, there was a very different spiritual environment. Whereas in the Midwest, a lot of people were Lutheran and Catholic growing up, but maybe not yet born again, haven't put their trust in Jesus, discovered a relationship with him. It was just a lot of religion. So I saw people come alive. Then moving to the West Coast and then serving, you know, in those three different cities, San Diego, San Francisco, and Seattle, that was a very different spiritual environment. And I thrive in it. But, you know, when I lived in the Bay Area, about 3% of the people were going to church where I lived. And, you know, now up in Seattle, we have 1.86 million people who don't follow Jesus here. And Seattle is also second most in the nation in terms of people who are de-churched, and eighth highest in terms of unchurched. And so it's a very different spiritual environment. I would say San Diego is probably more friendly to the gospel than the other two cities. Yeah. Like in San Diego, the average bumper sticker was not of this world. You know, I'd see those everywhere. And then I moved up to San Francisco and I saw Darwin stickers everywhere.
Right.
Eating fish.
Eating,
you know,
the fish, yeah.
Eating the fish and huge change there. So yeah, the different environments, I think the question is contextually, what does it look like to reach people? And at the University of Iowa, we spread the campus with the gospel and with the message. But in Southern California, it was a lot more relational, not the advertising, and it was word of mouth. And it's looked different in different places. But I absolutely love it when someone comes to know the Lord. I just, it's hard to find a greater joy than to see someone go from an eternity without God to just secure, loved by God, going to heaven. And I so deeply want everyone to hear the gospel and have that opportunity, because I never had it growing up, and I didn't have it until college, did not have a clue about Jesus. And I understand everyone gets to choose, but I feel like my calling is to make sure that we do present Jesus clearly and lovingly in word and deed, and that as a church, not just me individually, but as a church family, we're doing that in the community and all the places God has placed us, you know, locations, neighborhoods, the places we live, work, learn, and play. That's where I want to see the gospel spread.
Yeah, it's interesting. I have a friend in the UK, and she wasn't introduced till she was 36 to Jesus, and she is now just an on fire evangelist. And she's like, no one told me. Like, I had to go all those years and no one told me. So, yeah. You know, I'm curious, like, how are you helping to equip the people that are coming to your church and to churches around the area to really catch that fire that's clearly inside of you? What do you see as the roadmap for them to kind of really explore and experience that? Because there is no greater joy. Like, yeah. I always say, actually, you know, sharing our faith isn't hard. It's just having a conversation, but the joy you get back from it is unbelievable. It's like a drug. You just want more of that.
Yeah.
And so how do you help kind of infuse that into your community of people that are coming to your church?
Yeah. I think for me, it started with my own family, because in our family, we have such a range. We have a lot of Jewish people in my family, a rabbi in my family. We have a lot of atheists, agnostic. We have just a wide range, Catholic. And it's kind of like Baskin Robbins 31 flavors, and just trying to connect and have conversations that are spiritual within your family can be tricky. But I saw first my grandpa come and know the Lord in his 70s. And then I saw my uncle come and know the Lord. And that was a miracle. And then I saw my grandma in her 80s. This was like 2 a.m. We were talking up late at night, and she put her trust in Jesus. And my grandpa, who had many strokes at that point, was in the hospital. And when I got to go, and he couldn't talk anymore, when I got to go and share with him that grandma just put her trust in Jesus, the next day I shared that with him, and tears were just flowing down his eyes, because now he knew, and he had that joy before he went to be with Jesus, of knowing that his wife now has made the same decision. And, you know, my family, I've prayed with them, for them, for so many years, and I just continue to want to be authentic in my faith and humble, and then sharing the good news of my family. I think when it comes to outreach, it is important to teach and train, absolutely. But then there's another element where it's almost more caught than taught. And when you start seeing your peers and other friends share their faith, and you see people come and know Jesus, and then you get bolder. And a lot of times in America, we want to make it all individual. And then on the West Coast too, there can be kind of an independent, free spirit. But when I look at the Gospels, I mean, Jesus had a group, and they did it together. And I think when it comes to outreach, we need to make a shift in our mindset of, it's not just on me, but we're going to do this as a community, because people need to see a lot of different personalities following Jesus. And there needs to be a lot of people praying and caring for people. And that's so healthy. And so I hope that in our churches, there would be this culture of the privilege, not a pressure. We can't save anyone. We don't have the power to do that. But God calls us to be faithful, and he'll give us everything we need. And as we take those risks, and they are risks. I was talking to a pastor in the Midwest who is just not seeing the people in his church really do much outreach. And this is a huge church, but not a lot of new disciples at the time. And he said at the bottom line is that people value safety in their relationships more than the risk of sharing their faith.
That's right.
And so, yeah, you've got to go deep in your own heart and say, what's most important to me? And then when I share my faith, there's going to be a range of reactions. You know, with the snow days recently, our kids had this creative idea to go door to door and offer to shovel snow for $1 each. And they came back with some cash, some candy. But then my kids said to me, you know, Dad, some people just said no, and they just shut the door on us. And I thought, well,
how dare they?
Right, exactly. For a dollar?
Kids with shovels?
I know, sweet little faces. But the spiritual parallel there is, I was like, yeah, when you share Jesus, some people are going to just say no and close the door. But look at what happened. Our kids shoveled lots of snow. Lots of people were thrilled that they came by, and they came back with candy, so they're so happy. But there are just a range of reactions. But I would say this, know that when you share faith, some are going to put their trust in Jesus. Some, not yet. But, you know, that seed, God's going to just keep watering that seed. And then there's some people that might reject it initially, but you just bless them because you gave them the opportunity. And you never know how God is going to use that conversation. And I've had people come up to me later on and say, you know, the person that shared Jesus with me, I don't know who they were. And I was angry at them when they shared. But that's what God used. So results are God's. Trust God with the results. Just stay faithful. And it's exciting when you're around a community of people who start to get bold, who start to love people deeply and unselfishly. And when you're in a church that is not just thinking about the budget and the attendance, but is praying and caring for the millions of people in the city who don't know Jesus. And in our country right now, I mean, in terms of cities over 250,000 people, that's over 80% of America. And so we really need to take cities seriously. That's what I love about your vision and your ministry, is we're really looking strategically, how are we going to reach the cities? And we can't do it alone individually, and we can't do it at just one church. It's got to be collaborative.
That's right. That's right.
Good ideas are worth spreading. Isn't that what they say on TED? Well, we're going to use it here for the City Gospel Movements podcast too. Take a screenshot of this episode and share it on your social media. Subscribe to the podcast so you're aware of the latest episodes. And share this episode with a friend who may relate to the topics that we talked about today. We can't share these ideas alone, so thanks for partnering with us. Let's get back to the conversation.
So talk a little bit about that piece of collaboration, because I know that you're involved with other leaders in your community and pastors. And is this a new thing for you in Auburn? Did you experience that in San Diego and San Francisco? And kind of how has that invigorated you into doing even more?
Yeah, great question. There's been a longing in my heart for decades to be in a city where, yes, the pastors know each other, but that would just be a starting point. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, in so many cities, there's a lot of division or weirdness or competition. So a starting point is just to come together and get to know each other, to have lunch, to pray. But then I've been in cities before where, you know, maybe there's one event and you hand out backpacks, or there's, you know, one gathering of a concert or something. But my dream has always been come together with pastors who, yes, pray together, yes, have fellowship, yes, encourage each other, but far more than that, are intentional to bring the gospel to every man, woman, and child in the city. And that is so life-giving. That is so exciting. Drop the logos and egos a little bit and come together. God has one family. The Bible's clear, you know, and so when you come together, then it's going to take different shapes and forms, contextualized in different cities. Here in Seattle, I've only been here, you know, a little over 3 years. I had lunch with a pastor yesterday, and he's been here 31 years, and I've been here 3.1 years, you know, about that. And I was like, you've been here 10 times longer. And I honor you. Longevity is so good. But in Seattle, what's happened the last 3 years is something new, but it's in, I would say, alignment, collaboration with other works in Seattle. And this new work is called saturatethesound.com. And the way we're going about it is really building relationships and a lot of trust and a lot of unity. So we took the first year and a half just with a core team of about 12 people to...
All pastors?
Yeah, all pastors and ministry leaders, actually. Okay. So we're church and parachurch are involved, but we definitely want to see pastors, you know, connected and leading well in this movement. And so a group of 12, and it took us over a year just to get to know each other, look at the details of the vision, the foundation, what's our approach. And we really took our time with that. And then we kind of went public but it's still kind of gradual and fluid. So of course we launched the website, and we've made the hub here something we call cohorts. And we're developing these cohorts geographically, and we have a number of very solid cohorts right now, and then more that are forming. And it's exciting to see this. But rather than just come together for an event or fill a schedule, we're going a different approach, which is build relationships and trust and make sure everyone's on board with the vision. And then rather than creating a lot of new events, we're trying to bring health within churches. And I say this for a couple reasons. One is in Seattle, and I was surprised, we have the second most churches per capita in the country. I mean, when I think of Seattle,
that's surprising.
Yeah, exactly. I thought, you know, unchurched, like.
Right, right.
And so it tells you that we do need more churches in Seattle, but we really need healthier churches.
Yeah.
And if we're going to create a bunch of, you know, splash or big events, but we don't have healthy churches, how far is that going to go? And so we really want to build health in churches, and starting with the body of Christ there. And that's one thing that stands out to me is the local churches being a place where it could be multicultural, multigenerational, but gospel-centered. With the cohorts then coming together in different geographic locations and for that purpose of a disciple-making movement. And that's key because, you know, I was with a group of pastors from large churches and I asked the question, okay, how many of your churches do you feel like there's just awesome gospel movement? In other words, multiplication, that you have people who are making new disciples who are then making new disciples, not just one-on-one, but now spiritual generations. And across the board at the lunch, people just said, honestly, no, it's not happening. So we have a lot of sheep shuffling. We have a lot of people who are moving to a church that is maybe they feel like has a better preacher or a cooler building or better children's program or, you know, whatever that is. People are hopping around from church to church and they're not really intentionally multiplying in terms of discipleship. And that's at the core of what we're trying to do here with Saturate the Sound. We do want to have a lot of, you know, different events and some that we'll kind of own and create and other ones that we will just promote and that are going really well in the city. There's been a lot of groups of pastors that get together for fellowship and then some that get together for prayer. And we're just trying to, you know, same team again, work together there. And maybe in some of those circles, vision will start to expand a little bit. Because for some pastors, I think that is a new thing and a risk to go from, you know, fellowship feels safe and good, and prayer is good, but to then combine, collaborate, and think about how we could work together to reach the city. And it can get messy, and you have to hold it loosely, and you have to have a kingdom perspective, because it's like working two different churches, people coming together and working together to reach a neighborhood, that's not always so common. And then which church will the people go to that you reach, you know, and then that can get messy. And so it's not neat and clean stuff, but when I read through the Gospels and the Bible, it gets a little messy. And I think we just have to hold it loosely and we have to have a kingdom mindset. We have to be unselfish. But I would say a positive element of the spiritual context in Seattle is that most pastors know we are not going to reach this place alone. When you're in the Bible Belt, you know, I lived in Dallas, Texas, and mega churches everywhere. You can have a perception that, wow, we're doing pretty well. Because you look around at your church and you say, wow, big building, a lot of people, good giving. Like, look at us. It's going well. But in Seattle, you don't have that illusion as often. And so you
right.
know, like, we've got to lock arms and do something together, or else it's never going to happen. And I think a key in this is kind of changing what we call the measures of success. Individually, for a lot of people with church, it's even said, you know, well, if you're going to church and you're in a Bible study, wow, and then you're giving and serving, and people say, those four, amazing. And those are so good. But what's left out is making new disciples and outreach and that spiritual multiplication. And that has to become part of what we're looking at in terms of discipleship and a healthy following Jesus in a healthy way. That has to be in there. And then similarly on a church-wide level, a lot of times the measures of health, people look at, okay, the numbers, have they gone up a little bit? Budget, are we meeting our budget? Are most people happy? Sadly, on a lot of boards, and I've seen this, if there's some growth and the budget's being met and people are happy, they feel like we're doing pretty well.
Yeah, we're all good here.
We're all good. And we just need such a bigger, more compelling vision. We need a citywide vision. We need passion. And I'd love to see a new norm that every major city around America, when a pastor arrives, that there is a community, a faith community, leadership, pastors, ministry leaders, parachurch, that are already have good relationships, praying and intentionally reaching the city. And that's a passion for me that, you know, I haven't had that for over 20 years in ministry at any city. It's been so rare. And I would love to see that before I'm in glory become the norm in every major city. And that's one that I will right now more than tithe my time towards. That's one that our church board has supported and said, go for that, Jesse. And I'm so glad to look around Seattle and see other pastors that are the same way and are running after it too. And I mean, I just wake up excited to do that in the morning.
It reminds me of a meeting with a leader, I don't know, several months ago. And I said, well, what else would you be doing if you weren't doing this kind of gospel movement work in your city? And he's like, nothing. Like I wake up every day. This is what I know I'm meant to do. This is what I want to do. And it's the fire in my belly.
Yes.
And, you know, I think it's just, you know, it's so much of what our vision here at Palau and the City Gospel Movements team is as well, is just, I love that idea of the new norm, you know, that when a pastor comes into a city, there is already such movement of collaboration and love. Yes. And the spirit moving this group of people towards the next thing that God wants to do in that city. I know in talking to a lot of leaders, oftentimes people have this kind of aha moment, right? Mm-hmm. Where they kind of put all the pieces together and go, I think there's something missing here. We got to kind of reanalyze what we're doing, right? What was that aha moment for you? And then how did you find your people that, because this is a tough road if you're just going by yourself and you're trying to get all these people to think that your idea is a good one, right?
Yes, yes.
So how did you kind of put those, the aha moment, and then how'd you find your people and get rolling with that?
It's a great question. Sadly, you know, 3 years ago, I had no clue about some of the work that God was doing in Seattle when I got here, the potential. In a lot of major cities, I think there's a lot of pastors that aren't aware of what God is doing. That's why I'm so grateful for your ministry. And I called a pastor who now is in Colorado, but used to be here in Seattle for a long time. And I said, who has a citywide vision? And he said, you've got to reach out to Christ Together. You know, so I think of like what you're doing, citywide gospel movements. I think of Christ Together. And he said, Christ Together is working, just starting in Seattle, but, you know, call them. And they just brought a gathering together. And Jeff Vanderstelt is at work up here in Seattle. It's been a passion of his. And then the church I stepped into, Grace Community Church, was helpful in terms of launching his church in Tacoma called Soma. And so there's a relationship there. And then in asking around, it's kind of like the same names keep coming up. When you ask, like, who's thinking the city, and you hear someone's name, and then you ask another person, who's at work, who's got a passion for the city, and you hear some of the same names. Yeah. And pretty soon you hear those same names, and then it starts to form. And it starts out as just a gathering and a dream, and just start to get to know each other. And from that, it starts to take shape. And it's helpful to look around at different cities like Buffalo, Austin. I mean, there's different cities in America that are maybe a little further ahead in some areas and sort of connect with them and try to learn from them, but then also try some unique things. I'm really convinced that, you know, in Seattle, things will rise and fall on the health of these cohorts that I mentioned. And that's something that was a little different than maybe some other cities. But I, you know, in terms of ministry, I've always been committed to a small group ministry. And I think for us, that's the core of our church. Now, you don't have to do that, but I've seen so much fruit from that, that in terms of a bigger picture and pastors coming together, these smaller groups or cohorts, I think, are essential. And you know, there's a number of people who had so many good insights. There's a number of people who have been working so long in Seattle. I think of Seattle Union Gospel Mission and building, you know, Light Up the City and prayer there. I mean, so it's new in one sense, but it's connected to everything else God's doing in another sense. And it's all part of his script. And then there's so many different ministries that are citywide that have specific areas that they're focusing on, and that's wonderful. So we want to have real alignment. And I think what's important to me is there's a commitment on many things, and it's got to be a both and when it comes to serving the communities, but also spreading the gospel. And sometimes you see that, you know, one ministry is all out for outreach, but then they're not really meeting many needs. They're building relationships. Mm-hmm. They just want to spread gospel. And then other ones, great causes, but no one's coming to know Jesus. And I think we've got to think holistically in terms of there's got to be prayer, and there's got to be healthy relationships, and there's got to be serving our community, and there's got to be a tightness, and there's got to be a leadership team, and there's got to be a bold spreading of the gospel. And I think we need to dream big again, and then figure out within the body what are the different strengths, and even on our own team, what are the different strengths that we're bringing, and then celebrate those and kind of fan those into flame. And so we're learning so much. We don't have this down at all. And, you know, and it's in its infancy in some regards. I mean, 3 years, saturatethesound.com, that's not a long time. And we're just doing a lot of collaborating and aligning in our city. And there's incredible potential. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's good. I don't think we ever want to have it down. Right?
Exactly. Exactly.
I think that's always the place to be, because then we're always having to try new things and take some risks and stretch ourselves. And
I think listening, it's great. Today, I would just want to give a lot of hope and encouragement that even though your city looks huge, like amazing things can happen in that city. And I'd encourage you to get on your knees and cry out to God with that desire. Strong desires turn into strong prayers. And then to start to find some people within your church and other churches. The chances are there's some networks that are forming by God's Spirit in your city already. And just start to come alongside and be humble and serve and enter in and dream big and then connect with people from other cities and learn from them. And I see something new across our country right now. And I think that continually in the next 10 years, we are going to see some unprecedented work in major cities in America. Because when God's Spirit's moving, you don't have to try to twist someone's arm or convince. It's like when you share, someone else has already been sensing and praying for that, and then you just connect. And I see that within cities, and I see it across cities right now. And so this is a needed time in America, but it's also a sweet time, I think, in terms of potential.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that we are seeing more and more people that we're having conversations with that think this way. Mm-hmm. And that ultimately, you know, if we can 2x that number in a short period of time, and then we can 4x it and 5x it, now all of a sudden we've got, like you said, a new norm, right?
Yeah.
That this is the way that we do things and how we collaborate with each other. Still being able to, you know, be within our own denominations and be within our own churches, but there's this overarching church that shares the gospel and in our individual ways, but that we are pushing that ball continually down the field, right?
There we go.
Sports term.
That's right.
In there.
That's it. Work it.
Well, Jesse, thank you so much. My goodness, I'm sure I know I could, and I'm sure everybody listening could listen to you for a long time. So if anybody wants to get more information about what you're doing, it's saturatethesound.com. And you can kind of take a piece out of their playbook of how they're pulling this thing off. And, you know, I think one of the biggest takeaways is just keep asking. Don't stop asking. Who else is thinking this way?
That's right.
Because you will find them. And like you said, their names will keep coming up. And even if you start with two or three people, that's enough. Then you just start. collaborating. And I know we've experienced that in our own city here in Portland. And in fact, on our website, we've just posted a new document called Elevate Evangelism in Your City, talking very much about this idea of a model where you're bringing people together that are focused on sharing the gospel. So that's available on citygospelmovements.com. And Jesse, thank you so much. It's been really fun. And I encourage everybody to go to saturatethesound.com and see what you guys are up to.
Thank you, Stephanie. Thank you for this podcast and what you're doing, because I think stories are so key. Personal stories, stories of what God's doing in cities, stories that we hear from different cities across America. So I just keep telling stories like you are, and I think God is going to use those stories to change the spiritual culture in some major ways in our cities and in our country.
Amen.
We're excited to introduce you to our newest venture. Everybody hear that? Our newest venture. It's the City Gospel Movement's coaching program. You may ask, what do you mean by that? Well, have you ever had an idea you're wanting to brainstorm around with someone? You say, I think this idea might work in our city, but I'm not quite sure. Or maybe you're just getting started and want to touch base with someone over the course of several months. We've called together 9 of some of the sharpest gospel movement practitioners to make themselves available as gospel movement coaches. These coaches have mud on their boots, proven experience as practitioners in their own cities. They're innovators and risk takers, and the best part is they have the heart of a teacher. They want to share ideas, but they also desire to learn from others. If you're interested in bouncing ideas around or receiving guidance over the course of a period of time, the City Gospel Movement's coaching program is for you. Visit citygospelmovements.org/coaching, where you'll be able to find more information and fill out a form where we can learn about you and then connect you to a coach who would be a good fit. Again, if you're interested, visit citygospelmovements.org/coaching, where you can learn more and fill out a super simple form to find out about this personalized, super relational, and free City Gospel Movements coaching program. We can't wait to support you in the work you're doing in your city.
Thank you for listening to the City Gospel Movements podcast, where we celebrate and accelerate collaborative gospel work in cities around the world. For more resources, show notes, and to get connected to gospel movements around the globe, visit citygospelmovements.org. That's citygospelmovements.org. Keep believing in what God can do in your city.